I call the meeting of the Environment and Natural Resources Finance and Policy Committee to order. A quorum is present. Representative Jordan, would you like to move the minutes? I guess there's a couple corrections.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I would make a motion to approve the minutes with the correction that the Kozlowski bill was actually House File 4550, not 3550. Apart from that, I have examined the minutes and they appear to be in order.
Representative Jordan moves a couple technical corrections to the minutes. Is there any discussion? Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Ayes have it. The minutes are adopted. We're going to move the schedule around. Representative Feist is here. So, Representative Feist. Oh, Representative Hicks is here. So, we're close.
Human Services was long.
I was there.
Representative Hicks, House File 3425. I will move that House File 3425 be laid over for possible inclusion in a future bill. Representative Hicks, to your bill.
Thank you so much, Chair Hansen and members, for the opportunity to be with you to present House File 3425. This is a bill I introduced to support the county that I represent, Olmsted County. They acquired a rural property in Haverhill Township in 2017 through a state tax forfeiture process, and it's been extremely challenging and costly to manage. Haverhill Township is in my district and is just northeast of Rochester. It is an amazing community that I am so proud to represent. The bill sheds light on the problem experienced by counties across the state. Costs to clean up these properties and parcels are frequently higher than the revenues of the land sales they will generate, and there are few options and access to support these remediation efforts. Olmsted County has used local funds to address the most immediate environmental threats on the property. They've accessed a state program for which they were eligible. This request is to provide state funding to help the county clean up the remaining contamination at the site, which is very costly and estimated to be $800,000. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for allowing me to provide these introductory remarks. And I would defer to my testifiers to share more history and details on Haverhill Township and remediation site. I have our county commissioner, Mark Tyne, with us, and also Haverhill Township member.
Welcome. And we can grab another chair there.
Good afternoon, Chair.
State your name for the record. Yep.
And committee members, I'm Mark Tyne. I'm an Olmsted County Commissioner, and I'm here with
John Johnson. I'm a supervisor with Haverhill Township.
All right. I represent the county where the site is, and John represents the township where specifically the site is. And we thank you for hearing HF 3425, and we thank Representative Hicks for sponsoring this. All right. All right, so this is where the site is. It's just northeast of City of Rochester and Haverhill Township. It's a 22.2-acre site. It was forfeited we took possession in June of 2017. It was abandoned in 2015. Prior to the previous owner who abandoned the property, owning the property, we can go to the next slide. Prior to that, it was a radar installation for the U.S. government, and this previous owner owed $31,183 on it. Decided he didn't want to pay the taxes, didn't want to pay for the cleanup, abandoned the property, and now it's our responsibility. We've spent $150,000 so far, plus $80,000 of funds that we got from the petrol fund program, and we have about $800,000 to go. This is a property that it's, when it's all done, will maybe be worth $50,000 to $60,000. We can see the condition of the site. It had a little bit of everything: lead paint, miscellaneous fluids, underground storage tanks that I referenced, e-waste, and this is the big one, 80,000 tires. So there's a bit of long history with this property. These tires have been accumulating for decades, primarily accumulated over a short period, approximately 40 years ago. The state of Minnesota has been aware of this problem. Township Supervisor Johnson has specific records of the state's history with this property. The FPCA was aware of it, had numerous communications and letters with the owner, eventually even set up an account at a bank that he had to fund to clean up this site. Nothing ever happened. Now the site is abandoned, and now local township or county levy dollars have to clean up unless we can get some help with this. Let Johnson speak a little bit about that history.
I can talk a little bit about the history. I went through our files.
State your name for the record.
Oh, I'm sorry. John Johnson, Supervisor Haverhill Township, and thank you for listening to me, Chairperson Hansen. And this goes back to 1992 that MPCA was aware of these violations and had communication with the owner. And they had set up criteria for him to clean it up. And they gave him deadlines, and these deadlines came and went, and they gave him another deadline, and it came and went, and this went on four or five times. The owner did set up a trust fund with $56,000 in it for MPCA to access to use for cleanup on this site. And why all these letters were going back and forth and deadlines being extended, more tires showed up there, semi-loads full, were brought to this site. These pictures are even partial. There's tires in the woods there you can't see. MPCA's concern and our concern, the township, is the environmental side of this. If these tires ever caught on fire, this place would burn. I believe I'm going to quote MPCA here. Such a fire would be virtually uncontrollable due to the absence of fire lanes among the tires, firefighting equipment on site, and sand available. A tire fire would create prolific oil contaminating the soil and groundwater, and dense smoke affecting nearby properties. There's that side of it, and these tires store quite a bit of rainwater.
I want to point out that what he's reading from is from 1994.
And submitted by Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. The other side of it is they had the liquid, the inside of the tires tested. You know, obviously they collect rainwater, and they contained larvae that carried encephalitis, and they deemed this as a threat to the neighbors. They're still there. More tires have accumulated. MPCA said, we are going to... Well, this, and then we, the township, would complain, and MPCA's reply, and this was in 97, was Don Nelson of MPCA is monitoring the situation and reportedly finds the potential for fire and mosquito harborage not to be of critical nature for the residents. So I guess in a three-year period, it's gone from being very critical to not critical at all, even though more tires were added. That letter was sent in 97. MPCA has a court order authorizing MPCA to take the waste tires on the property into public custody and provide for their disposal. The MPCA is also authorized to draw on the letter of credit provided by Mr. Carlton Penns, the owner of the property at the time, in order to pay for the cost of tire cleanup. The MPCA may commence civil legal actions to recover a cost. Money was escrowed and made available to MPCA. I don't know if it was ever accessed or not. The tires were never cleaned up. And this is our frustration. We've contacted, we, the township, have sent letters to MPCA asking for action, and what we get back is it doesn't seem to be an issue anymore. So.
So this is a bill about a specific property, but it's a systemic problem for counties that we get.
Move the mic so we can get.
I'm sorry. This is a specific bill for a specific property, but this is a systemic problem for counties that when properties are turned over, they often have much less worth than the cost to reclaim the property. Mm-hmm. And so then that cost is passed on to local property taxes. So what we're asking for is a specific solution here and then action towards a more systemic answer to this problem, because every county faces it in some fashion.
Is there anyone else who would like to testify for or against the bill? Is there anyone here from the MPCA? Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just kind of keying off the last comment from the commissioner, because I think it is likely that every county does have a similar situation, maybe not to this extent, but we're just trying to recall if I've heard over the last decade something like this come to this committee before, and I don't recall. I'm not saying it shouldn't be here today, Representative. I'm just thinking out loud a little bit. Maybe there's a bigger problem that needs to be addressed statewide. I'm not sure that, I don't think anybody's against trying to work on this problem, but I just am interested in the precedent, and then potentially if this is a statewide county problem, maybe that's a whole nother conversation maybe, but I'm just thinking out loud a little bit.
Thank you, Representative Heinzman. So our purpose in scheduling is today, it is going to be laid over. I was hoping the MPCA would be here. You know, I think it's something that we need to be looking at what other funds are available for this type of cleanup. You know, where do we go? Is there something potentially in deed for brownfield cleanup? But by trying to shine a light on this, that we open up that conversation. You know, I've talked with Representative Hicks that this is hard to do a one-off on, but hopefully there is a bigger discussion that can start about this, because they're not. And you know, today is kind of tax forfeit day, and so this is something that local governments have to deal with. So putting these two bills up together to show, you know, there's not just income that comes from tax forfeit. There is cost that comes to the local governments and then just to the property taxpayers. So our purpose here is not, you know, we're going to start picking which ones have access, but that we need to, and hopefully, you know, we can find some way of existing funds that are available to help out in these situations, or how do we deal with this on a larger level?
Just
Representative
follow up, Mr. Chair. Representative Hicks, though, or maybe one of the testifiers, should this project be funded and move forward, what would be the plan with the remaining acreage?
Commissioner or Representative Hicks?
Well, it's not it'll never be a building site for homes, so it'll probably, we've essentially deeded a few acres to the township, the Middle Township Hall, on the clean part of the property. Maybe we would work with the township on taking over the rest of the property once it's reclaimed. Otherwise, maybe sell it for, like I said, $50,000, $60,000 to the neighboring property owner. And you're never going to build a house on it. You're never going to farm it.
Representative Heisman.
Yeah, nothing further, Mr. Chair. Just worried what would happen if we started doing more testing there.
Us too.
Any other comments? Representative Jacob, did you have?
Yeah. Thank you, Chair Hansen. So the initial ask of 800,000, but then you say a systemic problem into the future. So is there a additional ask more than the 800,000? Or
thank you for that question. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Chair. I just want to clarify. I think when the commissioner is talking about a systemic problem, I think he's speaking globally that this is not a one-off. Our community has a exceptional example, but you know, I think as a whole, what the commissioners have reported to me is that this is not a one-off. This particular example is a little bit more dramatic because it's been going on since I was in middle school, and so that makes it, you know, kind of a more lengthy. There's a lot of documentation and a lot of back and forth that the township and the county has dealt with. But when he says systematic, we're not talking about our property. We're talking broadly about the responsibility of how this falls onto counties and the lack of cooperation that my community has experienced since 1992.
Yeah, and Winona County has been in a similar boat more than once, so I understand what you're talking about. We want to be good neighbors and take good care of the environment. No doubt about it.
Any other questions? Griffin Brand.
I see a certain person. Oh, sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do see somebody in the audience, Mr. Hilgert with the Association of Counties. I was wondering if I could have him come down. I do have a question for him.
Mr. Hilgert. And state your name for the record. Representative Brand.
Mr. Hilgert, we have talked at length about counties represent the responsibilities for some of this land that gets into tax forfeiture. We have talked about tax forfeiture laws in Minnesota and how they are not constitutional and how we need to bring that back to a constitutional state. This is one example, but I'm sure there, like we had mentioned, across the entire state, there are issues, I'm sure. Can you maybe, I know we're on the tax committee, I'm on the tax committee at least, and we've talked about it through the tax committee, but can you give maybe an update of where we are on legislation that maybe could fix some of this going forward?
Well, actually, that's the next bill.
Okay. Well, maybe I'll hold on then. I'm sorry.
Mr.
Got the
Chair,
cart in front of the horse.
Mr. Chair, members, Matt Hilgert with the Association of Minnesota Counties. Absolutely, and I will not take the spotlight away from our very hardworking author, Representative Sandra Feist, with the next bill. The one thing I would point out is members have talked about this being a recurring cost in every single county. It certainly is. But to put it in perspective, too, one of the more common big costs that we see across the state are when schools might actually go through this foreclosure process where they might be consolidating. That property is given away to a developer. That developer does not develop on it, and they go tax forfeit. Mm-hmm. That school needs to be remediated or, in some cases, demolished. And in that case, I think there's Lacoparl, there's an example from Commissioner Scraba's district that could be upwards of $1 million to handle. And for some counties, that's five or six or seven times more than they get in their annual CPA adjustment. So I appreciate the committee in a bipartisan fashion acknowledging that, yes, there are some instances, which we'll talk about later, where there could be net proceeds or profits from certain sales, but for the vast majority of counties, this is a revenue loss and, frankly, an expenditure that other taxpayers are paying or it's taken away from their limited resources.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Representative Hicks, closing comments.
Thank you so much, Chair and Committee. I really appreciate you giving me the opportunity to share a little bit about the frustrations that my community has had in this space. When I was informed that this all started in 92, 94, the only thing that I could think of was I was 9, 10. I was in third grade. And I was in fourth grade. I now have two fourth graders. And my county is still having this conversation. And these tires are still present. And my community's ground is still continuing to seep whatever is happening in this scenario. So I have grown up and my children are the age I was when this started. And so I was honored to carry this bill and try to move this specific need for our community forward, but also to echo the other testifiers to highlight the need across the state as well. So thank you so much for hearing this today.
I renew my motion House Bill 3425 be laid over for possible inclusion in a future bill. The bill is laid over.
Thank you.
Next up. Thank you. House File 4822, Representative Feist, Tax Forfeited Property Excess Sale. I will move that House File 4822 be re-referred to the Taxes Committee. Representative Feist, I believe you have a DE2 author's amendment. Could you explain the amendment briefly?
Yes. So I don't know how brief to be, but basically we've restructured the bill since our last committee stop, and I'll describe what that structure is. So I think for now we can just say it's in the shape I'd like it to be in.
I will move the DE2 amendment to get the bill in the form the author wants. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. The motion prevails and the DE2 amendment is adopted. Representative Feist, to your bill as amended.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee. And thank you, Representative Brand, for the question. I have a whole presentation for you. So this bill is in response to the May 2023 unanimous decision by the U.S. Supreme Court in Tyler versus Hennepin County, which found Minnesota's tax forfeiture laws unconstitutional. Specifically, the Supreme Court found that the county's excess proceeds from the sale of tax forfeited land beyond the total, the county's keeping of the excess proceeds from the sale of tax forfeited land beyond the total delinquent property taxes, costs, and fees owed was a violation of the takings clause. The bill before you is the result of extensive collaboration and dialogue among stakeholders, including the Association of Minnesota Counties, who you just heard from, which convened counties across the state to evaluate the Tyler decision and identify solutions. Legal aid, the judiciary branch, constitutional scholars, the DNR, AARP, PLF, who was involved in the litigation against Hennepin County. We've all come together and had really good dialogue, and the bill before you is a result of all of that collaboration. I would also like to recognize the extensive research and council of nonpartisan staff that have worked with us on this legislation. House File 4822 does the following. It makes a public auction mandatory in all cases with redundant, clear notice to the homeowner that they are entitled to file a claim in order to prompt the county to pay out any excess proceeds to the property owner beyond what they owed and the costs of administering that public auction. It creates a process to ensure that the excess proceeds on minerals are not retained in violation of the takings clause, which is why we're here. With respect to the minerals process, it compensates the property owner at $50 for the value of any mineral interests. The property owner is notified that they can file a claim for any excess value of mineral interest beyond that $50. If they file a claim, then the DNR will determine the value of the mineral interests in a process described between lines 5.22 and 5.28 of the DE, and I've had really good conversation recently with the DNR, and they've had some good technical input, and we're talking about that as well. So those conversations continue. Due to the Supreme Court's holding in May of 2023, we must take steps to immediately reform our state tax forfeiture laws. This bill represents a balanced approach to this directive that incorporates the perspectives and expertise and hard work of many stakeholders and legislative staff. If we're not able to reform our laws, we are perpetuating a broken system for property owners and adding fiscal liability to our state. This problem will only get more expensive as time passes, so we need to act now. And with that, I will turn it over to my minerals experts.
Welcome.
Thank you, Chair and representatives. My name is Julie Marinucci. I am the Director of Lands and Minerals for St. Louis County, and I'm here to speak on behalf of this bill as amended. And I'd like to give a little bit of background on the tax forfeited land base in northeastern Minnesota. In northeastern Minnesota, we manage over 2.8 million acres, and this committee has seen me here many times talking about the how we manage these tax forfeited lands and the importance of this land base as it is part of an integrated land base of state and federal lands. So one of the primary goals as we've been working towards a solution to this Tyler ruling is trying to figure out that balance between protecting the land base, which includes benefits from timber management, recreation, mineral potential, and eco services like our wetland banking projects and those types of things, trying to protect that as well as honor the ruling and what was laid out by the Supreme Court, where we have to fix the system. So we're here to fix the system, taking into account all of these different considerations. The land base in northeastern Minnesota, it's important to understand that that was broadly created through forfeitures that happened back in the late 1930s, early 1940s. And so the vast majority of the land that we hold in conservation for the benefits I had just mentioned. We hold those lands, and they are out of scope for this broad ruling. The other side of the coin, though, is the previous bill. The forfeitures that we get, that constant annual churn of non-payment of taxes, that's when we get the properties that tend to be more problematic. We all have the same story multiple times over, whether it be schools, whether it be a garage in the city of Virginia that in an industrial park, we open the door and lo and behold, 200 unmarked 55-gallon drums of material that we didn't know what it was. So, I mean, these are the types of complexities that come with the management of these properties that come to us through the failure to pay taxes. So as we're working through the different avenues, this has been an ongoing process. We started this past summer through a collaborative with the Association of Minnesota Counties, trying to understand how the different corners of the state are different, because this ruling really does impact each county differently. And northeastern Minnesota, with our 2.8 million acres, it really is a significant impact, and we wanted to make sure that we had the ability to manage. And then further unique in northeastern Minnesota is the mineral side. And I can briefly touch on the importance of making sure we accommodate how our current system works. The way that it works now is when a property forfeits for the non-payment of taxes, before we go to sell that property, we reserve those mineral interests. And keep in mind, those mineral interests are part of the tax forfeited trust, which benefits the schools, the townships and communities, and the county broadly. It's part of that trust. But it also interplays with the school trust and the university trust. So all of those interests tend to come together, and they are held for the benefit broadly of all. And so the way that this works, we worked really hard to find a solution that recognizes that that reservation of the mineral interest has a value and it needed to be accommodated in the law, but then also that value is highly speculative depending on where it's at. So that's how we kind of arrived at that $50. It's like, we recognize that there is a reservation of the mineral estate, but the value of that is something that it really does require significant investment to prove out and understand exactly what that value is and where that property sits, that interest sits, really influences what the value is. So I'd like to just really reinforce our appreciation. This is a complex issue. It's not an issue that is widely understood, but it is significantly important to how counties manage these lands. And we've been following state statute. We've been following the law. We've been working in coordination with the DNR, with Department of Revenue, in execution of both chapters 282 and then also tying in with the minerals of chapter 93. And we look forward to continuing to work and perfect this bill so that it does function and protect the things that are important to us broadly in St. Louis County and then counties as a whole. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. We have several testifiers, so we're going to go to Killeen Lindgren, Pacific Legal Foundation. And then next up will be Mary Jo George, AARP, Minnesota.
Good afternoon. Mr. Chair and committee members, my name is Colleen Lindgren. I'm Legal Programs Manager at the Pacific Legal Foundation, and thank you for your time today. The foundation is a nonprofit public interest law firm that, as Representative Feist mentioned, represented Ms. Tyler in the Tyler v. Hennepin County decision or case in front of the Supreme Court, and we're dedicated to defending and promoting property rights and other constitutional liberties and really appreciate Representative Feist's engagement on this issue. And I've included some information in written testimony about our case and client, so I won't belabor that topic. But I wanted to come up here and voice our support for the amendment that you all adopted today because we have had some great conversations with Representative Feist, and we were previously opposed. So I just wanted to mention that the amendment today, at the time that the bill came out of Judiciary, we opposed this because the bill didn't, in our view, properly protect the rights of former property owners and only provided surplus if it was demanded by them. This raised constitutional concerns as well as the likelihood of exposing the state to further litigation. And as we understand the amendment that was adopted today, this issue has been resolved by improving notice to the parties, by requesting a sale, by requiring a sale, and automatically notifying the former owners of the right to the surplus. So we are grateful to Representative Feist for engaging with us on this, and I'm happy to take any questions if anyone has them.
Thank you. Mary Jo George, AARP, Minnesota, and then Joe Henderson, Minnesota Department of Natural Resources.
Good afternoon. My name is Mary Jo George, and I am with AARP, Minnesota. I'm the State Director of Advocacy, and on behalf of our 620,000 members statewide, we thank you for the opportunity to testify today on the Delete All. I'm going to sound like a parrot, but I just want to also thank Representative Feist for listening to our concerns and incorporating the changes in this Delete All to make it easier for homeowners, especially older vulnerable homeowners, to recover their equity in cases of tax forfeiture. A little bit about those differences you've already heard, but under Subdivision 6, there's more time for the homeowner to file a claim. So it goes from, it used to be 6 weeks, and now it's 60 days. We think that is much improved. We also believe, as Kylene said too, better notification. There will be a certified letter mailed to them. We are very concerned about that. And then it also takes the guesswork out of what is the excess surplus. So the county is going to provide that to them. So again, thank you, Representative Feist. We're very supportive of that. There are just two brief other issues that we would like to draw to your attention to and continue working on that. And that is under Subdivision 2. We would be interested in adding heirs to the definition of interested party when the prior owner of the property is deceased. We do believe counties should be required to do more to notify heirs of the property when the owner has passed away. Heirs of deceased homeowners have ownership rights even if the estate has not been probated and they're not on the deed. And we think this is really important just because home equity is one of the best ways to build generational wealth. So that would be something we'd be interested in. The second thing and final thing is under Subdivision 9 with regard to the expiration of the surplus. So if someone doesn't file within the 60 days, we would be interested in recommending that the proceeds be transferred to the state's unclaimed property fund, where former owners then could access those funds per the division, the Department of Commerce's division's policies. Otherwise, we are concerned, even though we have 60 days, that is a short time to claim the proceeds before they are lost forever. And again, from our perspective, really a loss of equity can really be devastating on the financial security of older, vulnerable adults who really depend heavily on this equity for their economic survival. So with that, we really appreciate the time, and again, thank you for your support.
Joe Henderson, Minnesota Department of Natural Resources.
Thank you, Chair Hansen, committee members. My name is Joe Henderson. I'm the Director of Lands and Minerals Division, Minnesota DNR. DNR did submit a letter to the Judiciary Finance Committee outlining our concerns with an earlier version of this bill. We have since been working with Representative Feist to address our concerns, and we thank her for her efforts. As mentioned, this bill requires tax-forfeited lands to be offered for sale at a public auction. When the property is auctioned, the bill requires that the county sell the minerals to the state for $50. Transfer of the minerals to the state would be consistent with requirements within the Minnesota Constitution, which requires that the state minerals be reserved in properties that it transfers. Under this Under this bill, interested parties may submit a claim alleging that the value of the mineral interest exceeds the $50 paid. If a claim is filed alleging that the mineral value exceeds the $50, the bill requires that the commissioner of the DNR determine the value of the forfeited mineral interest and provide a payment to the claimant of any excess amount. The DNR has three concerns with this bill. First, as written, the DNR commissioner must determine the value of the mineral rights if there's a claim for surplus proceeds. The claimant is not required to provide any data or proof of existence of valuable minerals for the assessment of the DNR. The DNR does not employ staff who work in the area of minerals valuation. We would need to retain additional staff to do this work. It would take additional attorneys, engineers, project manager, and economic geologists. Second, the bill seems to require an auction even for properties that have been typically withdrawn from sale. For example, under current law, tax-forfeited lands within state parks are withdrawn from sale. This withdrawal from these parcels or of these parcels from sale prevents inconsistent land uses and protects the conservation value of land surrounding them. The DNR would like to find a path to continue to withdraw certain properties. Third, because landowners could file claims challenging the DNR's mineral valuation, the DNR estimates that we would need to reimburse the Minnesota Attorney General's office for about one attorney's billable time per year to defend our actions. It's understood that the $50 mineral payments and funds for claims payments relating to mineral rights would come each year from the general fund. Thank you for hearing the DNR's concerns.
Is there anyone else in the audience who'd like to testify for or against the bill? Members, any questions? Representative Brand.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to go back to that question I asked with the previous bill. Let me try to maybe phrase it a little different and start by story. So a couple of months ago, I met with Blue Earth County and Nicollet County, two counties that I serve here and represent, and they both had concerns about maintenance, things like that picture with shredded tires and all kinds of stuff. I'm looking at the bill, and I see a lot of good things in here regarding, who owns what, where the money goes, and all that sort of thing. But I don't see anything about who's on the hook for that sort of thing on a property that's been forfeited to a county. I'm kind of curious to know if there's some clarification that I'm missing in the bill, some language, or if there's a need for additional language to be incorporated to suss out specifically whose responsibility that is.
Representative Feist.
Yep. So the counties are on the hook, and this bill doesn't do anything about that. Obviously, the status quo is more advantageous to the counties from a financial standpoint because those excess proceeds have been able to cover some of this cost, and now those are going to be returned to the homeowners. And there is a proposal by the Association of Minnesota Counties that could get at this, find a statewide solution rather than like a county-by-county specific funding request. We made the decision that is not necessary in order to make our tax forfeiture system constitutional. And the goal of House File 4822 is ultimately just to get our whole tax forfeiture system into compliance with the U.S. Constitution. And that is really a separate issue. But it is an issue that I'm also interested in, and the proposal by the Association of Minnesota Counties is like a good idea. I think we just need to do that separately and also think about what is the role of the state and how do we, like, what financial obligations does the state want to take on in addressing that environmental remediation that counties have when they forfeit some of these properties.
One additional follow-up. When Ms. Marinucci was up and talking about the minerals itself, if I'm reading Subdivision 8 specifically about claims for mineral interests, upon forfeiture, any iron-bearing stockpiles, minerals, and mineral interests shall be sold to the state. I'm a bit confused because I know she represents a county, and she said it would go to them. But I'm in the statute, I see the state. So it goes to the state or the county?
So I'm going to answer. I know enough to be dangerous. and then I can be corrected by Ms. Marinucci if I'm wrong. So under existing law, those mineral interests already forfeit to the state, and this doesn't change that at all. What this does is just creates a system for valuation of those mineral interests to ensure that property owners who are being forfeited are going to receive any excess proceeds.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, on that theme first, so the state gets the mineral rights, but the county administer those rights, correct?
Representative Feist.
That's my understanding. If Ms. Marinucci wants to come back and be available for any additional technical questions, but that is my understanding.
Ms. Marinucci.
Thank you, Chair, Representatives, Representative Scraba. The way that it works right now, the minerals forfeit to the state of Minnesota, and once they're held by the state of Minnesota, they are managed under Chapter 93, and the DNR is the managing agent of those minerals on behalf of and for the benefit of the tax forfeited trust, which includes the county, the school districts, and the local taxing jurisdictions, cities, townships, et cetera.
Thank you. One of the questions I had on Mr. Chair and Miss, I don't know your title, I'm sure, Marinucci, I don't know. Anyway, what I'm looking for is how is the $50, can you work with Commissioner Henderson to solve these issues that they have? Do you see the same issues or is it different?
I think those issues aren't that issue per se. The issue is that the process of valuation of the minerals is something that isn't necessary under existing law. And so we're creating an entire new requirement. And we're hoping that because most properties that are forfeited upon don't have mineral interests, that people will be happy to get an extra $50. But where they do want to ensure that they do get any excess value from those mineral interests, then the DNR is going to have a lot of work to do under this bill.
Representative Scraba.
That's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you, Representative Feist, for bringing this forward. I think Representative Brandt kind of covered part of my question, but will, just like clarifying this, will counties be able to recover their costs with this new process that's included in the bill now with the new DE piece to it?
Yes, for the most part. There is some outstanding question about realtor costs when the property is put up for public auction, but the language under this bill does permit the counties to recover the cost, and the homeowner, I'm trying to find the specific language, will be allowed to recover any excess beyond the, do you have the exact?
Let's talk about the
minimum bid. The cost levied on the parcel. Basically they do get to recover the costs to administer the foreclosure and also any fines that are assessed, but any amount that the property is valued at beyond what they owe and what it costs to go through this process, the property owner would receive.
Okay, so just also a follow-up then to that, is it also then, you know, their time involved? I mean, I'm guessing that they get compensated for their time because if there's more steps to the process, I'm curious how that gets factored in as well.
If I could turn it over to Jared, I'm trying to find the exact language, and if you could point to it and talk about the costs that are recoverable.
Mr. Swanson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Gilman, if you look on lines 8.1 through 8.3 of the DE amendment, this covers some of those additional costs beyond the delinquent taxes and associated interest and charges related to the tax payment. So the counties can also recover a portion of any attorney fees and costs reasonably incurred or expended in connection with the delinquency proceedings and the tax sale.
Representative Gilman.
All right. Thank you so much. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Feist, I'm trying to just confirm one way or the other. Does the bill apply to existing tax forfeited land, or will it only apply to new forfeitures?
Representative Feist.
This is a forward-looking bill, and it will apply to any forfeitures, I believe, after January of 2024. We have a start date, January 1st, 2024. Yeah. So this is a forward-looking bill. People who have already been foreclosed upon and who might have had an unconstitutional taking can look at the claims process for the settlement agreement with the AG's office.
Representative Heisman.
Thank you for the clarification. Nothing more.
Are there any other questions? I have a couple to get on the record. Representative Feist, you know, I asked you about aggregate, if that would apply under mineral interest. Representative Feist.
Yep, I learned what aggregate was this week, and it is a surface property, and so it does not include it in mineral interest, and it would be included in just the regular property forfeiture.
And Representative Feist, do minerals or mineral interest include helium or methane?
I feel like I'm in a science exam. So I learned that those are gases this week, and gases are considered mineral interests under this bill. Also, I learned that oil is not a mineral. So we have the DNR here.
That was simple. She is correct. Gases are managed in the mineral estate.
I'm like flushing from my minerals.
We'll have the chemistry and the science lesson. We'll have a periodic table at the next meeting for people. And then Representative Feist on the fiscal note. And so it has a number of appropriations. There's tax, there's revenue, there's pieces for the DNR, there's for the Attorney General. It's my understanding, and just if you could clarify your understanding, that these costs would be not coming out of the environment budget target. Is that your understanding?
That is my understanding at this time.
Are there any other questions? Closing comments.
I urge your support of this important bill so that Minnesota no longer has unconstitutional tax forfeiture laws.
I renew my motion that House File 4822 as amended be re-referred to the Taxes Committee. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say no. The motion prevails. Yay. Congratulations. members, next week we will be rolling out the omnibus bill. For there will be a fiscal bill, and we'll have a process that we'll make sure we clarify as that goes out. So probably posting and then markup on Thursday. Mr. Strohmeyer, I'm correct.
Mr. Chair, it's essentially the same process that we used with the budget bill last year.
And there's no committee with EID, so we will be done today. There's nothing tomorrow, no committee tomorrow, and no committees on Thursday morning. So the next time this committee will meet will be next week. If you have members, if you have any concerns or questions about any of your bills or items, please let us know very soon. We are adjourned.